Live from the College of Communication, Arts, and Sciences at Michigan State University, it is now time to go beyond the X's and the O's with WKAR's Current Sports.
You want to go after an athlete, one of my athletes, come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
My style is impetuous. My defense is impregnable.
Well, I'm the best corner in the game. When you try me with a star receiver like Crabtree, that's the result you're going to get.
Yes, did I express to them I was mad? I was furious. Just furious.
I know my wife will at least shot fake one time.
We're talking about practice, not a game.
And I told our players, you need to be more like a dog. We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Looking in the mirror. Do I look good? I got my extra bands on. I got my other shoes on. Be a dog. We don't need no meows. We don't need no cat.
Here's your host, L. Martin.
What is up, beautiful people? Welcome to this Wednesday edition of WKAR's Current Sports. It is May 6th, 2020, and happy hump day to you all. Oh boy, glad to be here with you all. It's a nice day outside. You know, it's not too warm, but temps are in the 60s. The sun is out. The sky is blue. I'm loving it, and I really hope you guys are being safe. As again, we all get through this thing together. We got a great show coming your way on today's Current Sports. I want to address a few things. I am going to address what is taking place right now with the University of Michigan men's basketball team. Juwan Howard after his first season. And, you know, really, it's unfortunate for Juwan Howard, who's the head coach of the Wolverines on the hardwood. Because last year was his first season, and you don't even really get to make a point, right? You don't even get a chance to fulfill some of those end-of-year goals that you had because of the pandemic breaking out and the NCAA tournament, along with, of course, the conference tournament of the Big Ten, both getting canceled. So it's just a weird time that we're all living in, and for coaches in the world of sports, like that of Juwan Howard, you know, you kind of feel cheated a bit, you know, by the powers that be, by the universe, that you didn't get a chance to prove something and finish out that year with a bang. And we got some transfer news concerning Juwan Howard's team. Yet again, you know, I feel like every week for the last month, I have been bringing you all transfer news centered on Juwan Howard and the University of Michigan. And I've got some more transfer news today that really puts this team in a category that I didn't see just a month ago. All right, so I'll dive into that. Also, I want to have some fun, and I'm going to touch on ESPN's top sneakers list. Yeah, have you seen this? ESPN ranked the top 74 sneakers in NBA history, ranking the top sneakers from the Converse, Chuck Taylor, All-Star, to the mini Air Jordans, and everything in between. And I'm going to give you that list, and you know, I'll share some personal stories when it comes to a few of these kicks that I grew up rocking myself, and I'm sure many of you did as well. So we'll have some fun there. Also, I'm going to bring to you some news concerning other sports documentaries that are being moved up in light of the pandemic. As we all know, The Last Dance, profiling that final year of Michael Jordan's Chicago Bulls in 1997-1998. It has been so compelling to watch this 10-part docuseries. I mean, we have 4 parts left, and every Sunday night at 9 p.m., people are flocking to their televisions, staying glued to what is happening in that docuseries. It's pretty amazing stuff, and it's really woken up other film producers and other networks out there that realize that you can capitalize on many people being stuck at home trying to flatten the curve with nothing to do and looking for something to watch. And that is certainly aided in people watching this docuseries every Sunday night. And I'm going to let you guys know about some other docs that have been pushed up for our viewing pleasure. Gotta love it, okay? There's three of them, and I'll tell you why I am really, really excited about one of them, all right? So you don't want to miss that. And as I mentioned on yesterday's Current Sports, to close out the Tuesday edition of the show, I did have one final point to make when it comes to sports officially resuming here in these United States of America. And what needs to be addressed in order for sports to resume. Because I don't know if you're like me, but there is a part of me that when I turn on the news and I see other states opening up, you know, and I see restaurants opening up and barbershops and hair salons and so on and so forth, it really makes me nervous because it's not a light switch. We just can't flip on the country and everybody is going to be safe and fine. It's a gradual thing, and I just really hope that we're not doing this too soon. So I'll dive into a little bit of that as well. But if you, yes, you, would like to be a part of today's show, you know that there are multiple ways in which you can do so. You can pick up that phone and text us at 517-355-WKAR. Again, that's 517-355-9527. If you shoot us a text, I'll do my best in addressing your comments there. You can also weigh in courtesy of Facebook at facebook.com/WKAR News. Leave us a comment anywhere there. And you can also tweet us. Tweet me directly at Al Martin WKAR or tweet the show at WKAR News. But for my longtime listeners, you guys know what's next. You know how we start this party. Here are your current sports quick hit headliners. Again, for this hump day, May 6th. And we start here. Cooper Rush will be reuniting with his former head coach, Jason Garrett. Check this. The New York Giants announced that they claim the Charlotte native and former Lansing Catholic and Central Michigan quarterback off of waivers on Tuesday afternoon. The NFL Network's Ian Rappaport tweeted out, quote, "Makes a lot of sense. Never bad to add depth at the QB position." Rush was released by my Dallas Cowboys on Monday. I brought that story to you to start the week. After three seasons with the Star, the Cowboys signed veteran Andy Dalton to a one-year, $3 million deal on Saturday night, paving the way for the team to waive Rush. Rush reunites with Jason Garrett, who was fired by my Dallas Cowboys following the 2019 season and was hired by the Giants to be their offensive coordinator. Garrett was the head coach in Dallas for all three of Rush's seasons. So a lot of things make sense there. You have a former head coach of my Cowboys who is one of the reasons why Cooper Rush was on that roster and worked with Rush throughout his time in Dallas, now saying, hey, come aboard, I am the offensive coordinator in New York. So makes a ton of sense there. All right, as we all are looking for different ways to scratch that sports itch, to fulfill that sports appetite that is not in our lives right now, when it comes to baseball fans everywhere are finding a little bit of safe haven when it comes to the Korea Baseball Organization. How about that? There hasn't been an official start date for Major League Baseball, shut down by, of course, the coronavirus pandemic. ESPN has taken advantage of the KBO, which has a number of former Detroit Tigers actually on its rosters, and will televise 6 regular season games per week, along with the postseason and championship series. Now, games start between 1 a.m. and 5 a.m. Eastern Time in stadiums throughout South Korea without fans in attendance. Opening day early yesterday morning kicked off an expected 144-game schedule. There are 30 foreign players in the 10-team league, most of whom had short stints in the majors before going overseas. And the most notable American is actually right-handed pitcher Dan Straley, who enjoyed 7 years in the majors with 6 teams. But here are the former Tigers to watch in the Korea baseball organization. You've got Chad Bell, who is balling out for the Hanwha Eagles. Also, Warwick Sopold. He is also playing for the Hanwha Eagles. William Cuevas of the KT Wiz. Dixon Machado of the Lot Giants. Those are the Detroit Tigers balling out in the Korea baseball organization. So for Detroit Tigers fans out there, and just baseball fans, period, if you are interested, just make sure you're probably fitting in a nap sometime in the afternoon or evening, all right? Because that's pretty early, 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. All right, enjoy that, folks. Some solace, I guess. All right, Michigan basketball guard Cole Bajema entered his name in the NCAA transfer portal on Tuesday. Now, Bajema, a 6'7" reserve and former four-star recruit from Washington, had 9 appearances last season and averaged 2.9 points per game in 37 minutes of action. He connected in 10 of 13 field goal attempts, showing promise as an offensive option who could create shots off the dribble. Now, Bajema was a member of the 2019 recruiting class who committed to the Wolverines the previous year. That's when John Beilein, was still the head coach. After Juwan Howard succeeded Beilein, he immediately connected with Bajema to ensure that the prize signee was on board with the new regime. Now, Bajema's departure will be felt by a program that has already bid adieu to rising juniors David Julius and Colin Castleton, who previously entered the transfer portal. The Wolverines now have a pair of scholarship openings and could have as many as 6 vacancies at the start of the 2021-2022 campaign. So, a lot of movement that has been taking place when it comes to Juwan Howard's Michigan men's basketball roster. And later on this hour, I am going to address 1, why those transfers are happening, and 2, what this means for Juwan Howard's tenure moving forward as the head man in charge in Ann Arbor. Okay, and with the boxing world shut down, along with virtually all other sports not named UFC, Flint's own Clarissa Shields has found another way to keep active in the public eye. The 3-division world boxing champ will be appearing in season 2 of the Titan Games, starring actor and former pro wrestler Dwayne The Rock Johnson. NBC's website describes the show as an athletic competition that gives competitors, quote, the opportunity to step inside the Titan Arena and achieve the impossible. Competitors will push their bodies to the limit by battling opponents in innovative and unforgiving head-to-head challenges designed by Johnson. Now, weekly winners will return to battle each other in pursuit of a $100,000 grand prize for the top male and female competitors. Shields will be part of a cast that includes pro athletes and everyday citizens. The pro athletes in the cast include former NFL players Joe Thomas and Victor Cruz, stuntwoman Jesse Graff, snowboarder Hannah Teeter, and MMA fighter Tyrone Woodley. Season 2 premieres on May 25th the Titan Games. Go ahead and check out Flint's favorite daughter, Clarissa Shields. I love that. All right. As I mentioned, and I have been mentioning every Monday and every week since it is premiered, to be honest with you, the Last Dance Chicago Bulls Michael Jordan documentary that we have been watching for the last, what now, 4 or 3 weeks now, I should say. It has been riveting television, and it has put a lot of players who played in the Michael Jordan era in the spotlight, because many of them are featured in the documentary, and many of them are doing interviews with different networks and different radio shows out there after it airs the following week. And one of those individuals who has been one of the big talks of the docuseries this week after Sunday night is Basketball Hall of Famer Charles Barkley. And Barkley opened up about numerous things, including his soured relationship with Michael Jordan that is still that way today. Barkley admits that he's still really, really sad, quote, really, really sad about the fact that his longtime friendship with MJ deteriorated years ago because of critical comments that Sir Charles made about the way Jordan ran the then Charlotte Bobcats franchise. But Barkley doesn't sound optimistic about some kind of reconciliation, which is sad. Quote, the guy was like a brother to me, for shoot, 20-something years? At least 20-something years. And I feel sadness, but to me, he's still the greatest basketball player ever. I wish him nothing but the best, but there's nothing I can do about it, brother. That was what Chuck had to say on Tuesday's Waddle and Sylvie show on ESPN 1000 in Chicago. So in the wake of the most recent episode of The Last Dance that featured Barkley's sons falling to Jordan's Bulls in the 1993 NBA Finals, Barkley was asked again if there was any hope the relationship between the two stars could ever get back to where it was. Quote, oh, he got my number. He can call me. Isn't that unfortunate, too, to see two men who were and are still uber successful in the game of basketball and beyond now, to see how close they were and to see that relationship the way it is now, it's so unfortunate, especially when you take in consideration where we are right now as planet Earth when it comes to this pandemic. How two men like this can't bury the hatchet. It's a bit unfortunate, and I know Michael Jordan being Michael Jordan, it's like if you cross him once, he is not going to give you the opportunity to do it again. And in my opinion, I kind of side with Chuck here. I mean, Chuck was just doing his job and saying that, look, man, you got way too many yes men in your corner that don't care about your overall well-being. And Barkley gave an honest assessment about how he viewed Michael's job when it comes to the Charlotte Bobcats, about the way he ran the Charlotte Bobcats franchise. He had too many yes men around him. So Barkley was just doing his job. MJ took it personal, and it hasn't been the same since. But to see two men like this, and also to go a step further, to see two African-American black men feuding like this and holding this grudge this long, life is way too short, and I really hope that Chuck and MJ get back to where they were, or at least bury the hatchet. All right, and also another player who has seen his name in the spotlight this week after last week's The Last Dance episodes is Patrick Ewing, because they showed a lot of that Chicago Bulls and New York Knicks rivalry and how competitive that was. Basketball Hall of Famer Patrick Ewing, who was like the guy for those New York Knickerbocker teams of the 90s, he revealed yesterday that his two Olympic gold medals and the NCAA championship ring were stolen. Ewing discussed the loss of his 1984 and 1992 medals on the Dan Patrick Show. Quote, my house got broken into in New York, and at one point they stole my medals. So I called Jerry Colangelo, who was the former USA basketball chairman, and he was great to be able to get me two replacement medals. Ewing won the 1992 medal, was part of the Dream Team and the United States' first roster of primarily professional players. Ewing said of Colangelo, quote, "He took care of me. He's a great guy." Oh, I love that. Ewing, who is now 57 years old, said the 1984 national championship ring he won with Georgetown was also taken. And he was able, though, to buy that back as somebody tried to sell it online. So, yeah, keep those items close, Pat. All right, that does it for your current sports quick hit headliners. The ways in which you can weigh in are by texting us at 517-355-WKAR. That's 517-355-9527. Shoot us a text there. You can also tweet us. Tweet the show at WKAR News. Tweet me directly at Al Martin WKAR. Or you can leave a comment on our Facebook page at facebook.com/WKAR News. Let's hit our first break. When I come back, I'll tell you about the other sports documentaries that are actually being moved up due to the pandemic, much like The Last Dance was. And I'll give you my final points on what must happen in order for sports to resume in these United States of America. Happy Hump Day. We'll be right back. All right, welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Happy Wednesday to you all. And before I push forward here and tell you my final points, give you my final points on what must happen in my eyes in order for sports to resume, I do want to let you guys know, because you guys know I've been very excited about The Last Dance. It has been so compelling to watch. The ratings are through the roof when it comes to The Last Dance docuseries right now, and ESPN is certainly benefiting from that. And again, it's just a slam dunk for ESPN right now, because people are just sitting at home and just, you know, chomping at the bit for these episodes to come out every single week. So right now, to give you some actual numbers when it comes to how many people are watching The Last Dance, the numbers have continued to rise week after week after week. We just completed week three of the docuseries this past Sunday, and episodes 5 and 6. Averaged a combined 11.4 household rating in the Chicago market on Sunday night on ESPN and ESPN2, which presents a version stripped of profanities in their original 8 to 10 p.m. telecast. So a lot of people don't know that. I mean, ESPN and ESPN2, they air them at the same time, but one of the versions airs without profanities. And I love how they've gone like no holds bar in that area for this docuseries. And that Nielsen estimate represents 11.4% of the market, or roughly 371,000 homes, which is about 61,000 fewer Chicago area households than watched in episodes 3 and 4 a week earlier, and 26,000 fewer than episodes 1 and 2 drew in the first week. But even so, Sunday's two episodes were by far the highest rated programs on Chicago television. And nationally, Sunday's two new episodes averaged, check this, 5.5 million viewers across ESPN and ESPN2. That's pretty amazing. That is pretty, pretty amazing. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Two more weeks, 4 more episodes, part 7 and 8, except for, starting at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time here in Michigan, going to 11, of course. And the series is scheduled to conclude on May 17th, which is coming
very quickly. Slow down a bit. Let's enjoy these last four, though. But there are other documentaries that are coming out that I want you guys to keep an eye on that have actually been moved up, much like The Last Dance was moved up in production so that as many eyeballs as possible can get on them. And those documentaries are, and these are ESPN documentaries, Lance, which is a two-parter based on the career of disgraced cyclist Lance Armstrong. That will air later on this month on May 24th and May 31st. So May 24th and May 31st, mark your calendars there as Lance will premiere. Lance Armstrong is such a... He's a compelling figure for many different reasons. You know, he went from a beloved cyclist who won so many Tour de France yellow jackets to being looked at as a villain because he took steroids. He lied to the public about it. You know, the whole famous Oprah interview where he came off as just really a mean man. That's going to be very, very good. Also, Long Gone Summer, the story of the 1998 home run chase between Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa, that will air on June 14th, so mark your calendars for that one as well. Many of us remember that home run chase between, you know, Marky Mark and Sammy Sosa. That was just so fun to watch. I even remember that, even though I was like, you know, 7, 8 years old. I remember, you know, seeing Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa on Wheaties boxes and on ads in my home, you know, and my dad talking about it. So that's going to be very good. And the big one, though, that I'm very excited about, because you guys know I have three muses in life. One being Michael Jordan, one being Tiger Woods, and the other being the great Bruce Lee. Actor and martial artist, you know, a lot of people consider him to be the godfather of mixed martial arts. ESPN has a documentary looking at the life of martial arts icon Bruce Lee that will air on June 7th entitled Be Water. I can't wait for that. I cannot wait for that because you guys know I am a Bruce Lee fanboy. All right, just like I am with Michael Jordan. All right, I was actually watching. I just finished reading Bruce Lee's book, The Bruce Lee Way, done by Tim Baker. The foreword is done by his daughter Shannon Lee, who I am a big fan of. She actually is the host of the Bruce Lee podcast, which I listen to all the time as she combs through. The life of her late father, who died way, way too soon in his 30s. Just a kind of a freak accident there. There are many conspiracy theories out there. I don't know if I buy into them at all. But, you know, Bruce, what we do know is that Bruce was gone way, way too soon. And, you know, I love, you know, reading about his outlook on life, which was so positive and was centered on, you know, hard work and being in flow with whatever craft you're pursuing. And, of course, for him, it was acting and mixed martial arts. And, you know, there are just so many life lessons. But it's fitting that I bring this news to you because, again, I literally, probably around like 5 o'clock yesterday in my apartment, I had just finished up this book. And, you know, there are so many gems out there. I actually posted some of his quotes leading up to the, you know, the final pages of the book on my Instagram page. And, you know, this is one of my favorite ones, actually, just to share one with you guys. Remember, no man is really defeated unless he is discouraged. I love that. I love that. Don't be discouraged, folks. Whatever. And this is a discouraging year, isn't it? It's easy to get discouraged in 2020 with everything that's going down. All of your dreams and goals have basically been put on pause here. Don't get discouraged because, again, remember that no man is really defeated unless he is discouraged. Wise words from Bruce Lee. Some inspiration there from the great Bruce Lee on today's current sports. And, you know, there's also another one here, another quote I would like to share if I can get to it in time here. Here's another one. Don't fear failure. Not failure, but low aim is the crime. In great attempts, it is glorious even to fail. Oh, boy, that's great stuff. You see why I'm a big Bruce Lee fan, right? Oh, boy, and I'm looking to my left right now. My sister knows, the whole family knows how big of a Bruce Lee fan I am. She actually bought me a Bruce Lee, like, painted, not mural. It's not that big, but it's you know, it fits on the wall quite nicely. But it's a picture of Bruce Lee, you know, a painted picture of Bruce Lee from the movie Enter the Dragon. And it's got some Chinese symbols on it as well. It's just Bruce Lee's name in Chinese. So just awesome stuff. I can't wait for Be Wata, a look at the life of martial arts icon Bruce Lee. Again, that will air on June 7th. All right, folks. You know, in yesterday's current sports, I mentioned, and we've been kicking around, you know, thoughts on how sports could resume, because we're all itching to see it. You know, I brought up the Korea Baseball Organization, which is kind of filling a void for sports fans out there, helping and filling a void for sports fans out there, even though it's not the majors. A lot of the players you don't even recognize. A lot of the teams you can't even really pronounce. It's just different. You know, and I think we are a long way from seeing live sports take place. I mean, with the exception of what Dana White is doing with the UFC, because UFC, I believe it's 249, is set to still take place this weekend. And fighting events are a bit different. It's a bit different. You know, you don't have as many people involved in a singular sport like UFC is. And the same can be said for golf. Same can be said for, you know, boxing, tennis. Even though Bob Arum, who is, you know, the guy, the head man in charge when it comes to the World Boxing Organization, he isn't pleased about what Dana White and the UFC is doing right now and still holding UFC 249 out in Florida. You know, maybe in part, of course, he wants us to be safe as a country, but also because, I mean, he's in direct competition with the UFC. So to see them still put out their product when his product is on hold, that may make him feel some type of way. But you know, bottom line, we've been kicking around thoughts on how sports can continue to resume, and I touched on a few things these past few weeks. Excuse me. And the big elephant in the room, and if you missed my rant about this, because I'm not going to go totally into my thoughts on sports resuming here in America. If you missed that bit, listen to yesterday's current sports by going to WKAR.org. But, you know, the gist of it for me is this. One, I really am cautious, just like many sports fans out there. I'm cautious in seeing sports back on TV, let alone allowing spectators attend, because I don't believe we are out of the woods completely yet. I just don't. I still think we should be shut down for some time. We don't even have a vaccine yet. We're not out of the woods. And I know, especially for us here in Michigan, with the weather getting nicer and nicer, it makes your cabin fever even worse, doesn't it? When you look outside and it's a nice day, it makes you just want to get out and about. But we're not out of the woods yet. And we aren't to the point where if you have sports up, how can you allow spectators in the building when we aren't even up to par when it comes to our testing? You need to test all those individuals to make sure that no one sick is coming into the venue, because if just one person is sick, One bad apple can certainly spoil the bunch, and that thing can spread like rapid fire. And, you know, when it comes to collegiate sports, this is the big thing I want to address. When it comes to collegiate sports, how can you still have college sports taking place? How can you have a college football game or a college basketball game taking place when so many universities have already come out and stated that they are not going to have in-person classes and they are preparing to hold virtual classes throughout the fall? So with that being said, if you don't have students on campus, how can you expect college football or college basketball or any college sport for that matter to resume? Because you're basically saying to college athletes that, yes, students may not be here on campus, but you are required to be here on campus now because you got to play this sport. I mean, they'll be looked at as unpaid employees. That's how you would be looked at. If you are not allowing students to be on your campus, but you are telling student athletes to be on campus to make sure these games take place, how fair is that, especially when these student athletes are not getting paid a dime? It is unpaid labor. That's what it is. And it will be a very bad look for respective universities and collegiate sports as a whole if you implemented that. You can't. To cover your tail, you would have to allow students to be on campus. And that's not going to happen right now. It's just not. And you know what's so remarkable? And I get it, man. You know, these are unprecedented times. We have never seen anything like this. It's the craziest time that many of us have seen throughout our lifetimes. Simple as that. And I know that our economy every single day is taking a major hit. And to bring it to the sports world, the revenue of universities, the revenue of college athletics is going to take a major hit. I mean, heck, I was reading yesterday alone that when it comes to the University of Michigan, not having college sports for this upcoming year could cost, and then, of course, you know, if you take into account, you know, students not being on campus and all that stuff, they are preparing to lose $400 million to $1 billion in revenue. Yes, I'll repeat that. $400 million to $1 billion with a B, dollars in revenue. That's just the University of Michigan. Look across the board when it comes to universities out there. I mean, the amount of money that's going to be lost is unprecedented. But would you rather bite the financial bullet or risk your health? Or risk death, to be honest with you, because that's what we're talking about here. You know, the University of Washington put together a poll, or did some research, I should say, and they came to the conclusion that their estimates in these United States of America, when it comes to coronavirus deaths, have now more than doubled in comparison to the original projection. The original projection was a little over 60,000 people. And anytime you're talking about losing lives, it's alarming. 60,000. But now with the reopening of different states and different states opening up restaurants and being more relaxed on, you know, the rules, the quarantine rules, they now believe that number, which again was around 60K would now go up to more than 130,000 deaths here in America. Sports are the last things on our minds when you are talking about numbers like that. Let's hit our final break. When we come back, I want to end the show on a light note here, and I want to talk about ESPN's top sneakers list. I'll bring that to you as ESPN has ranked the top 74 sneakers in NBA history. Very cool stuff. And also Juwan Howard, as he tries to figure this whole transfer thing out and tries to put the wheels back on the track in the midst of how last season in his first year ended as head coach of the University of Michigan men's basketball squad. That and more. We'll be right back. All right, welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. We have just under 10 minutes left here in the show. And this is very cool stuff. We'll end the show on a light note here. This is very cool stuff, and I certainly had to click on this main page of ESPN once I saw this. But, you know, and I think it was spearheaded because on Sunday we heard the story of Michael Jordan and how Nike was able to sign Jordan. A lot of it had to do with his mother, Dolores, saying, "Mike, son, you're going to get on that plane and you're going to at least listen to what Nike has to say." Because, you know, at first, MJ was all Adidas. And, you know, his mother making him get on that plane along with his father, you know, it really changed the course of sports marketing forever, didn't it? So, you know, we've been talking a lot about Michael Jordan shoes and that moment in the docuseries. So I think, you know, that's the reason why this was spearheaded and put out there. But ESPN has put out the top 74 sneakers in NBA history. And I'll just give you the top 10 list here. And, you know, my overall thoughts as to how well of a job ESPN did this. And let me see if I can shout out the specific author here. Nick DePaula actually put this together, and, you know, I'm looking here, I'm trying to see, I'm wondering who was a part of this poll or list, if you will. maybe it was just ESPN as a whole, but anyway, this is what the list reads, and I'll give you the top 20 here. Why not? I was going to do top 10, but let's do top 20. The number one sneaker, actually, I'll start from 20 and go down. I'll save that. I don't want to just give it away right off rip. number 20, the Nike Zoom Flight 95 worn by Jason Kidd. That came out in 1995. Kidd headlined those kicks during the All-Star season in 1995. Then we have the Air Jordan 6. I actually have these kicks right now in my bedroom on the floor. The Air Jordan 6, which came out in 1991, worn by, of course, Michael Jordan. 18 is the Nike Penny 2. Also came out in 1996. This was a year after the number 20 sneaker I just mentioned by Jason Kidd in 1995. But the 1996 Nike Penny 2, worn by Anthony Penny Hardaway. Awesome stuff there. Penny was so good. 17 is the Nike Kobe 5, released in 2010, worn by Kobe Bean Bryant. In 1998, number 16 brings in the Adidas KB8, which was worn by the late, great Kobe Bean Bryant. Coming in at number 15 is the Nike Dunk, released in 1985, worn by multiple players. It was a part of Nike's Be True to Your School campaign during the 1980s. And again, this shoe wasn't, you know, pinned on one specific player. There were multiple players that donned that sneaker. has a lot of resemblance to the Nike Air Force One. Okay, number 14, N1 Tai Chi, worn by Vince Carter. I love this shoe. And this is when N1 was really starting to make headway with the N1 mixtape tour, and they were able to pry Vince Carter. But this was released in 2000, and we all knew that this shoe was going to be big after watching what Vince Carter did in the 2000 dunk contest wearing these shoes. So awesome, awesome stuff. And this is what former N1 VP Ryan Drew said when it came to that dunk contest, probably the greatest dunk contest performance of all time. That shoe got all of its traction from the dunk contest, period. Awesome, awesome stuff. That's marketing, folks. It's marketing. Coming in at number 13, the Nike Air More Uptempo, worn by Scottie Pippen in 1996, and this shoe is still popular to this day. It has the big words Air on the side of it. I love that shoe. Love that shoe. Number 12, the Puma Clyde, coming out in 1973, worn by Walt Clyde, the Glide, Frazier. Gotta love that. And it's just a really low-top shoe. I don't even know how you play basketball on that shoe. I mean, it looks like it has no ankle support whatsoever. But yeah, that and I've seen people rocking that. Not to play basketball, though. That came in at number 12. Number 11, the Air Jordan 4, released in 1989, worn by, of course, Michael Jordan. That is a very, very famous shoe. I love that shoe. Number 10, the Nike Hyperdunk, coming out in 2008, worn by Kobe Bean Bryant. So we got some Kobe Bryants coming in the top 10 here. Number 9, the Adidas Superstar, classic shoe. The shell top, the shell toe, I should say. Love that shoe. That was worn by Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. And much like the Clyde Frazier shoe, I don't know how you wear that to play basketball. No ankle support at all. But that shoe was worn and championed by, of course, the rap group Run DMC. The recognizable three black stripes and that defining rubber shell toe. Gotta love that shoe. Number 8, the Reebok Question in 1996, worn by the great Allen Iverson. I had a pair of those. I had a pair of those. I love that shoe, man. And they've actually brought that shoe back, and it's still very, very popular. Number 7, we also got another pair of Kobe's here. Released in 2009, worn by Kobe Bryant, the Nike Kobe 4, very sleek shoe. 1988, the Air Jordan 3 comes in at number 6, worn by Michael Jordan. That shoe is uber, uber popular as well. So you see Jordan is dominating this sneaker list right now because it still to this day remains the most popular sneaker in basketball history. But these are iconic, right? Coming in at number 5, the Converse Chuck Taylor All-Star, released all the way back in 1917, worn by multiple players. Oh, man, the All-Star has since become the most purchased sneaker in industry history. That's amazing. Amazing stuff. I mean, a pair of Chuck Taylors, I mean, it just goes with everything. It's a really cool shoe. And you know, sometimes simplicity is the best, right? And the Converse Chuck Taylors are simple but sleek. Love them. At number 4, the Nike Foamposite 1 in 1997, worn by Anfernee Penny Hardaway. Those were very popular shoes. Number 3, the Nike Air Force 1, released in 1982. I didn't know this, worn by Moses Malone. But as we all know, that shoe got more and more popular, especially in 2002 when Nelly released Stomping in My Air Force 1s. Yeah, everybody had to have a pair of Forces when that song came out. And here are your top 2, of course, dominated by Air Jordan. Air Jordan 1, released in 1985, worn by Michael Jordan. And number 1 is the Air Jordan 11, released in 1995, worn by Michael Jordan. Those two Jordans are my favorite Jordan shoes. And according to this list, are the favorites of many people out there.
All right, folks, I'm going to table the conversation when it comes to all of the transfer news concerning Juwan Howard's University of Michigan men's basketball team. I'll get to that later this week. So we'll pause it right there. I'll see you on the Thursday edition of WKAR's Current Sports. Be smart, be safe, and as always, please be easy, people.